And gentlemen, 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and as usual, that means it's time for the other podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. Hey, folks, it's the other guy on the other podcast, John Hoke, here sitting across from Stacy and in Valdosta, Georgia. According to the indicator on my front panel here, it says we have Diana.
You do.
Excellent. I am very pleased.
How are things down there in the land of live oaks and Spanish moss?
Well, let's see. Forest Avenue is North Forest is well, Forest is being street is being renamed to Barack Obama Boulevard.
Wait. What?
Yeah.
Sounds like a real super spreader event to me.
It would be. But basically, I pointed out to my husband that we will now refer to it as Bob.
Well, basically, there's a reason why this podcast is referred to as the other podcast. It's because when Stacy and I were sitting at the lobby bar at CPAC when we started this thing, 4 years ago now? 3 years ago, something like that. 78. So, yeah, 3 years of... No, yeah, 78 was, so we're at this 3 years now. We're fundraising.
2018.
So anyway, it's, we wound up with the other podcast as a spinoff on the other McCain, your website.
Yes, and you can find my good friend John Hoag's blogging at the other at hoagwash.com.
Yes, which is the other website that related to this that does a lot of blogging, but there's a certain amount of excellent blogging about not-for-profits.
I'm sitting here looking at the at the map. I'm just gazing at the map of South Forest Street through Valdosta, which is going to be named Barack Obama Boulevard.
Yeah, I'm thinking about how long that name is and how people are just going to start calling it Bob.
the other thing is that, is it going to be like Martin Luther King Drive? Because in any city you go to,
MLK.
Wherever you go to, if you want to buy some drugs, the place to go is Martin Luther King.
Well, it's called MLK, so maybe this will just be a case of B.O.
Oh.
Boom, boom. Okay. Well,
meanwhile, back at our insane attachment we have with football in the fall, just take it away.
Yeah,
Stacy, get it out of your system.
I got an early start this year because Alabama's quarterback, Mac Jones, got drafted in the first round by the New England Patriots, and he had his debut, NFL debut, wearing his number 10. So it's 10 for the win. That's what you've got to keep in mind. And he did all right. My brother Kirby, John was here earlier, and I'm trying to keep my expectations reasonable. He's a rookie, right? Okay. How many rookies start during their rookie season? He's a quarterback. It takes a while to learn this system. But so going into it, I kind of had a thought, no interceptions, no fumbles, no injuries. In other words, no big mistakes, don't get hurt. And he cleared that bar with some room to spare. He was 13 of 19, but one of his incompletions should have been a touchdown. He had the guy wide open. Well, actually, the guy wasn't wide open. He was covered pretty tightly, but he put the ball right in there, and the guy dropped it. It was Christian Wilkerson. And after the game, by the way, Christian Wilkerson said, I should have caught that. And I think every Alabama fan watching this, and, you know, that's, you know, I'm not a football fan. I'm an Alabama fan, but and it's different. But anyways, every Alabama fan watching that said Devontae Smith would have caught that. You know, but anyways, and he got some praise from Cam Newton, which is important because Cam's a 10-year veteran. You know, he himself went in the first round out of Auburn. And so, you know, the idea that he and Jones are kind of like teammates and this rivalry has got to be awkward. There's a lot of factors going into that. But anyway,
I work with people who went to the University of Tennessee. It can be done.
Vanderbilt.
Weird when they put orange stuff up, don't you?
Given my Scott Irish heritage, I wear orange on St. Patrick's Day.
I was watching the game Thursday, you know, between New England and Washington, and there was a player on there, and I want to say he was a linebacker or something like that. Anyways, he made a play and said, yeah, he was from Vanderbilt. And I'm like, wow. Actual football players at Vanderbilt.
It happens
occasionally, apparently. Yeah. Anyway. So, I'm sorry you went to, you know, the Yale of Tennessee.
No. You have it a little bit confused there. Harvard is the Vanderbilt of the North.
right. Yeah. It got a good bit of pride over there. Pride goeth before a fall. Anyway,
so spirit before a tumble.
Yes, and haughty spirits, yes. But anyways, yes, they quoting King James Bible there. But anyways, yes, the so, you know, Kirby is thinking that, you know, that Mac Jones is going to start, that he's you know, and I, you know, that, and he's expected to be the second coming of Tom Brady. But I'm going to try to keep my hope reasonable. But I haven't been watching the NFL, but I'm going to start watching the Patriots just because of Mac Jones' Roll Tide.
Well, okay, you can. My son decided he was a Patriots fan at one point, and so you can the two of you can root for the Patriots together.
Yeah, so it's young people.
Yes. Meanwhile, speaking of young people.
Oh.
And by that I mean people just barely 30 years old.
Mm.
I did some shoe leather reporting yesterday. Got in the car and drove on down from my house just outside of Westminster, Maryland, to Rockville, Maryland, and parked in the parking garage that is a part of the county office complex. Miss Stacy and I have been to this garage before. And then I walked up the little hill there on Jefferson to the district court building to courtroom 513. And the first order of business that morning in that courtroom was the entering of nolle prosequi motions. That means not going to prosecute motions.
Nolle pros, yep. They call it.
The state's attorney's office was doing that, and the false charge for failure to obey a temporary peace order filed by Rebecca Jones against Christina Pashaw was among the cases dropped.
Yes.
According to a spokesman from the state's attorney's office, there was no evidence to support the charge.
Yep.
And the word no was actually emphasized in the conversation. Now, the only other, if there were some people who were questioning my veracity, we'll get to that in my reporting. I will just say that what I reported is based on what I saw in the courtroom and what I learned during an interview in the lobby of the courthouse. Mm-hmm. The only people who were in the courtroom with me when this went down were an assistant state's attorney, Judge Moffitt, Judge Moffitt's clerk, and a bailiff. Rebecca Jones was not there because the case was not going to go forward. So her, and this is in scare quotes, testimony, was not necessary. And the case has been expunged. Mm-hmm. Game over.
Yep. Game over.
And,
I said, teehee. My whole thing about this is that I was shocked, absolutely shocked, that there was this reporter slash blogger, Substacker, whatever he is, believed Rebecca Jones. I mean,
Grant Stern. You're referring to Grant Stern, right?
Yes, I am. Am I supposed to wait on that?
Because no, roll with it. No, roll with it.
How could he just take the word of a woman who is so incompetent that in her own filings, she is $9,000 out? And it's not, we're not talking millions of dollars here. We're talking less than $100,000. And she's $9,000 out, and she does it. It's like she can't even do basic arithmetic. The woman is not only crazy and a liar, she's incompetent. And he just takes her word for it. He's stupid.
Well, yes. And the interesting thing was his initial reaction was to claim that my reporting was essentially false.
Ha, right.
Grant Stern said that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see that.
Yeah, so, well, it would be one thing to say, well, gee, I'd like to see verification of that from a second source, which, by the way, Charles Cook did. He called up the state's attorney's office, talked to their public information office, and everything I said was confirmed and a little more, actually. He did some good reporting there.
Yes.
And eventually, Stern did publish what amounts to a flaky retraction. But it's
a question. A real question, Stacy, is there a substitute for picking up the phone like Cook did and calling and saying, hey, I was looking at this and I was wondering about this case?
No, there's no substitute.
Well, the other substitute is actually going there and watching. Well,
yes. Right, right. But the point is that I don't know everything about Grant Stern's background, but Grant Stern doesn't know jack shit about how journalism is done. Okay. And according to what he said, okay, the source of his information was text messages from Rebecca Jones. Who had texted, so he's in text communications with Rebecca Jones. Now, what does that tell you about Grant Stearns and his agenda?
Nothing good.
Yeah, right. But the point is, as I said on my blog, he's a Trump-hating clown. Okay? His main qualification for being a Substacker, a blogger, whatever he wants to call himself, his main qualification is that he hates Trump and also hates DeSantis. So because he's willing to believe that anyone who shares this, bias obviously must be a saint. Okay. So because Rebecca Jones is an enemy of DeSantis, an enemy of Trump, an enemy of all Republicans. Therefore, if she said that Christina Pashaw was in a plea bargain, well, you just take that to the bank. Not even bother to check. Don't even call or anything, to verify what she's saying.
But, I mean, here's the truly dumb thing from Shaw is not in a plea bargain. I mean, she knows that the case has been null prost. Mm-hmm. Jones had to have been known that it was null prost because she would have been told not to bother showing up on court that day. Mm-hmm. The subpoena, and she had been subpoenaed for the trial, which was at 2, and of course the case had been moved to 9 a.m. for the Noel Prost docket. So, I mean, you know, there's, and then she's going on, she knows that the case is dead, and yet she's trying to spin this tale, and it's like, don't you think eventually this is going to time out? And, you know,
right. That at some point you run out of plausible lies.
Well, at some point, it's not that you run out of plausible lies, is at some point it's just flat out over.
Yeah. Yes. And but she, you know, and it's why I'm trying to think of the mental process, right? By which Grant Stern thinks, well, I'll just take what she told me and print that as if that is a known fact.
Well, it's too good to check.
Right. It's one of those things what they call the story that's too good to check. And it's also a single source story, okay? Mm-hmm. That, in other words, that he's relying on one source, and that's always the most dangerous kind of thing, unless you have some sort of document that is your second source. You know, if someone provides me with a police affidavit or something like that, okay, I can write based on that, an actual court document.
Particularly one that's authenticated.
Right. If it's an actual court document, but apparently what she did was to show him the docket of that there's a trial schedule.
She showed him the original subpoena that was issued to her back in June, automatically because the case was coming up.
Right. And shows him these documents and then says she's had a plea bargain. Really?
Yeah. She and the bargain was, since there was no evidence, they wouldn't try the case. Well, no, it's because technically you can call it a plea bargain because nolle prosequi is a plea entered by the state.
Yeah.
So I guess it wasn't.
Well, anyways, I summarized the whole thing by saying Rebecca Jones is the Deb Frisch of Michael Avenatti's.
And I have to warn Stacy that he is asking for it, for a defamation suit from Avenatti, because Avenatti can say, well, at least I've won one case sometime.
But yeah, and we're going to get to Deb Frisch, a little later in the program.
Meanwhile,
if you folks don't know who Deb Frisch is,
you'll find
she
out.
Well, look up crazy in the dictionary, and you'll see her mugshot.
Yes.
I'll just put it down.
Well, actually, there's she's one of the people there. One of the other crazies that you'll find there. Is a fellow by the name of Brett Kimberlin. And one of the reasons why yesterday was kind of a sweet day for me, not only did I get to see, and I'll just call her my friend, Christina Pashaw, case thrown out. It was the anniversary. It was the 8th anniversary of the first false charge that Brett Kimberlin filed against me, being nolle prosequi in Montgomery County in the district court.
So you know a thing or two about the Noel Prost docket.
Been there, done that, got the T-shirt.
Oh, God, yes. And I remember all the wild gloating on Team Kimberlin's side about, you know, oh, you were going to be leaving that courtroom in handcuffs. And I'm like,
oh, I thought it was leg irons, but okay, go ahead.
Okay. No, I think they said handcuffs, but it doesn't matter because it was absurd. And those of us who were watching this were going, say what?
You know, but I
harassed him by writing truthful statements about his past and present activities.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, that's harassment.
Yeah, but to tell the truth.
Well,
about
that's harassment.
Psycho and a liar, I guess so.
Well, no, it's exactly the same basis for the peace order petition that Jones filed against Christina.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, Anyways, folks, by the way, I guess I should fill y'all in. We're talking about Rebecca Jones and Christina Pashaw as if everyone knows who they are. Rebecca Jones was employed to do mapping technology for the Department of Health in Florida. Mm-hmm. And she, her job with in terms of the COVID pandemic was to show a map, to show the data they had as a map. Okay. Well, she got the idea somehow, I don't know how, she claimed that they were somehow suppressing the data and claimed to be a whistleblower, got fired from her job.
There's a little bit more in there. Apparently she was a very insubordinate employee anyway, and was on thin ice anyway, and about to be fired anyway. And I think this
she
just may
fired,
be a reason.
She decided she was a
yeah. I think this happened after she was let go
well,
for
the
other
point
reasons.
Being that she is has been used by the left, including MSNBC and some other left-wing news outlets.
Chris Cuomo has just had her on several times.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get to the Cuomo thing, I believe. But anyways, but she was used by the left as a weapon to attack Ron DeSantis, who is seen as a future threat from the Republicans. And so they're trying to take out DeSantis, and Rebecca Jones was used until they figured out that she is so full of shit that her eyes are brown. Did I just say that out loud? Oh, okay. Anyways, Christina Pashaw wrote an article in February, published an article at Human Events that was the first real big exposure of what a bullshit artist Rebecca Jones actually is. And so then Rebecca Jones, who had somehow moved to Maryland, filed peace orders against Christina Pashaw and tried to get her prosecuted and everything. And that is all over now.
Yeah, well, it's interesting the connection between Jones and Maryland. She was born in Pennsylvania and grew up in Hagerstown, Maryland, and then went off to college, I think, Cornell initially, and then graduate school at LSU, and then Florida State. That her connection to Florida was being a graduate student there, and then getting after she was fired from the graduate program for inappropriate liaisons with an undergraduate student, she wound up working as a geographer in the Department of Health. Notice what I said, a geographer.
She molested a teenage boy. It was a consensual relationship. Everyone was adult.
But the point is
that no business doing that.
Yeah, but I mean, basically, when the grift was starting to be profitable, and it was a good thing to be nearer to the centers of power, she came back to Maryland and found a place in suburban D.C. But now she is apparently going. She was thinking about running for the congressional seat out in her hometown of Hagerstown, but apparently has decided no, she's going to go after the seat in Florida 1. So we'll see how all this affects her political career.
Political career, yes.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Christina grew up. Her father's in California. Her father's a law professor at a university in Southern California. And she got her Pepperdine, and she got her undergraduate degrees from USC, and has a master's degree in something related to diplomacy and foreign affairs from Hopkins. Mm-hmm. And she has spent most of her young adulthood in Eastern Europe working as a political consultant and as a journalist. Hmm. So excellent preparation for a job of being press secretary to a governor.
Yeah, a governor who is everyone, and I think everyone expects DeSantis right now. He's the front runner for the 2024 nomination, assuming that that Trump doesn't want to run again.
Well, he may still be the front runner anyway.
Well, you know, we'll see. At any rate, so that's the reason that Florida and the whole COVID thing is really big right now. It's an attempt by the left to take out DeSantis, but we'll see.
Well, DeSantis has got a pretty good record in Florida. Mm-hmm. Yeah, undergraduate degree from Yale, Harvard Law School. Service in the Navy as a judge advocate general.
With the Navy SEALs.
Yeah, he was basically the SEALs lawyer in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he understands
he
tough situations.
He is the youngest governor in America.
Right now, yeah.
And by the way, great baseball player.
Yeah. Well,
talked about Yale baseball players before. But
you know what? The one thing he doesn't have?
He doesn't have the magic D.
Nope.
Yes. So that's the reason why he's getting all the flack.
Yeah.
Why his press flack gets all the flack.
I had a post this week called The Magic D.
Where he comes to the wrong conclusion for the right reason, but we'll get there.
You know. This is, by the way, you know, I'm an opinionated person. I don't know if...
I've noticed this. It's, you know, you're almost as opinionated as I am.
And I was about to say,
dear.
You know, working with a first-class know-it-all is sometimes annoying because no matter how excellent my opinion is, if it's not exactly his opinion, it's wrong. See, so.
Of course.
But anyways, meanwhile, I was browsing the headlines at Real Clear Politics when I noticed this one. Ohio's special election, a good day for Democrats. And I was kind of scanning it, and then I noticed the byline, Al Hunt. And I said to myself, is he still alive?
He's even older than I am, but he's still alive.
Yeah, this guy's been around since I was in grade school. When I came to Washington, D.C. 25 years ago, he was already the bureau chief for the Wall Street Journal. And had been forever.
I can remember seeing him on Meet the Press before I was out of college.
Yeah, this guy is... This guy's older than dirt. Like I said, he's older than Ho.
He's 6 years older than I am.
Yeah. When you're old, he's post-Hogue age. That's how old he is. Okay. But the thing is that Al Hunt, his columns were always boring.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There was no insight. There was no, there was never any news in his columns, never any exclusive. It was always just the rehash of the conventional wisdom with a hefty dose of Democratic Party propaganda. The only qualification he had for that job was he's a liberal, right? And that's how it is in journalism, okay? In academia, right? In Hollywood, most of Hollywood, if you're nothing else, as long as you're a liberal, right, you're in
life. You're golden.
Yeah, you're golden, baby. And so I then read this column of his, and it's about, first of all, they had this left a left center, and it's not really like that, but they had a far left candidate in the Cleveland district of Ohio. And
Nina
I forget,
Turner.
I guess that's, yes, right. And this left wing Nina Turner was backed by AOC and Bernie Sanders and all that crackpot crowd over there. And it's a vacant seat that for the congresswoman that Biden has tapped to be Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. And so it created this open seat, special election in the 11th district. Mm-hmm. And it's solid. I mean, this is one of those 80%, Democrat districts. And so there's no chance here for Republicans. But anyways, the moderate candidate... so-called moderate, who was
slightly to the right of Stalin.
Yeah. Slightly less crazy than AOC and Bernie Sanders. Brown actually won. Chantel Brown, who's the county councilwoman, and won the thing, and that is actually good news for Democrats, although it doesn't really matter that much. You know, I mean, they were going to win that district. They could have nominated anyone in that district.
They could have put a glass of water with a D beside its name, and that's
right. Exactly.
And people talk about Southern Yellow Dog Democrats.
Oh yeah, yeah. This the 11th district is about as hardcore as it gets for the Democrats. So meanwhile, but then in the 15th district, there was another special election, and a guy named Mike Carey won the GOP primary for a vacated seat in the 15th district, and he defeated a large field. And Carey is a former lobbyist for the coal industry, and was backed by Donald Trump, and so he won. Now Al Hunt says Democratic strategists privately welcome Trump's clout within the Republican Party, believing a number of the non-incumbent candidates he's endorsing will be weaker against a Democrat. Ohio's 15th, centered in the Columbus suburbs and small town, is Republican, but Democrats think they have an outside shot in the November general election. And my reaction, and I'm having a language problem here, my French.
Don't say.
This is unadulterated partisan bullshit, my friends. If you actually think Democrats have an outside shot at winning Ohio 15, would you care to wager $100 on that? $10? $5? No, hell no. James Carville wouldn't bet a nickel on the Democrats winning this district. They have got zero chance. Okay, I run down the vote here, and this is a district. Okay, where did I put it in the comments? Okay, 2010, Republican 54%, Democrat 41%. 2012, Republican 62%, Democrat 38%. And it goes on and on. 2014, the Republican got 66%. 2016, the Republican got 66% again. 2018, and this is important because 2018 was a banner year for Democrats. They were riding high, 2018. The Republican, 59% to 40% for the Democrat. Good last Lord. Year, 63% for the Republican, 37% for the Democrat. There's no way that it doesn't matter. And they
it's so lopsided they don't even try to steal a vote.
He's a lobbyist for the coal industry, says Al Hunt, as if that's something that the Democrats can use in this district. Oh, he says it's the suburbs of Columbus. It's Zanesville. Folks, yeah. I ask anyone who has ever been to Zanesville, Ohio, when you're driving around, what do you see out there in the fields? Oil pumps, mm-hmm. oil rigs. It is that part of Ohio is oil country, and down, you know, there's a lot of coal in that area.
It's fossil fuel alley.
It is a fossil fuel region of the country, and they don't want no damn liberals running in there. I know that district. My sister-in-law lives over that way. So no. But I continued onward with this trend to talk about someone else who's got the magic D.
Uh-huh.
Namely, Andrew Cuomo. And then I went on to predict that this is, he's not never going to resign and blah, blah, blah. The very next morning, I turn on the TV. Holy crap. Holy crap. Cuomo's resigning. So
of course he was resigning, as I had been instructing you for months. Yeah, look, as we watch his career just being shuffled off to the memory hole, there's more fun on the horizon. You know, he killed a sufficient number of senior citizens to cause New York to lose a seat in Congress. And it's beginning to look like the state's inner party has decided that what they want to do is basically gerrymander AOC out of a seat.
Ooh. By the way, I have a question about that, but I may do it by email. Go on.
Well, look, they're going to create as many safe seats as they can, but if they've got to give up a seat, it's
not going to be Gerald Nadler.
No, it isn't. So AOC basically will wind up being gerrymandered into a district with another safe Democrat.
Right. So they'll have to fight it out.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so
Godzilla versus Mothra, basically.
Yeah. Well, there's a wonderful tweet by Iowa Hawk. Godzilla is less than Mothra, is less than Rodan, is less than, it goes on a bunch of these Japanese, and finally is less than Scalia. But meanwhile, though, AOC is beginning to push the idea of primarying Chuck Schumer.
Oh, good.
In her dreams.
So, that offers the intriguing possibility of two competing factions of the national inner party, meaning it was the state inner party that kind of supported Cuomo until it got a little dicey. And then the national inner party never has been for him because he's a threat. He's another one of those damn governors that might run for president. So basically that's the reason why he's down. So it's going to be interesting to see
AOC versus Chuck Schumer. I'm sorry. If you experience an erection lasting more than 4 hours, see her physician. But I'm excited about that one, man.
Well,
I've got dreamy eyed.
Oh God, the most inane. The two most inane media whores in Washington D.C. Going into knife fight mode. It would be fun.
I love when Democrats go after each other. But the thing is,
the thing that's going to be wonderful is you have two significant interest groups inside the inner party nationally. The Bernie bros are going that element of the inner party are definitely going to be behind AOC, whereas the saner Democrats, notice I don't say sane, just saner, less insane Democrats, are going to be behind Schumer. So it's going to be an amazing fundraising race to see what happens between the two of us.
Except, I'm sorry, my charming but ditzy niece versus that old knife fighter, this could be embarrassing.
That would be great, okay? If Chuck Schumer's...
The big thing is going to be the outer party fight outside the state. And like I said, it's going to be interesting to see who can raise the money. Meanwhile, raising money is an important activity, and there's a yellow button on your blog that has to do with that.
Anyways, okay. I'm sorry. I'm experiencing symptoms.
I may have to see a physician. You have a Satan boner.
I'm sorry. Okay. So meanwhile,
at the yellow button,
if you go to theothermccain.com, you will notice at the near the top of the center column a yellow button with the word donate on there. If you will click the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute to the support of the blog and the support of the podcast, but mainly to make my wife happy. And that's, of course, the most important thing. is to keep Mrs. McCain happy. And so, so meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hoag's blog, hoagwash.com.
I don't have a yellow button, but I do have lurking over there in the sidebar on the right, a tip jar icon. Click on that, be taken away to my PayPal account where you can support Hoagwash and also this podcast. Or you can scroll down in the sidebar and find the links shopping at the Hoagwash store by all sorts of interesting trinkets and trivia, let's call it, that's branded in ways associated with the blog. I take a cut of that action. And of course, there are shopping links to Amazon on both our blogs that help support us as well, where you participate in the Amazon Affiliates Program, which is a nice thing Amazon does. When you use those shopping links on a blogger's blog, they get a small commission. So we appreciate that support. Regardless of how you choose to support us, please remember the five most important words in the English language.
Hit the freaking tip jar.
Yes, please. We appreciate it.
Yeah,
meanwhile,
shameless capitalists.
One quick plug for me.
Yes.
Very quick. Hey, folks, if you need nonprofit advice, please give me a call. Because you go to my website, dealyadvancement.com, and contact me. I have rescued kittens to support. Thank you.
Rescued kittens.
Yes.
Yeah. So I saw that on your Facebook page today.
There are a lot of rescued kittens. Yes.
Oh no, you're turning into a cat lady, Diane.
No, I'm not. The little orange guy got adopted today, and his little sib is just being taken care of till she gets adopted.
Yeah, there you go. But I have a rescue cat that at Stately Hoag Manor. Meanwhile, Stacy is an honest blogger. Mm-hmm. And so the very next day, after predicting the stability of
the Cuomo
career,
regime.
Yes, he ran this headline, Cuomo announces resignation.
It was a good article. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah. Anyway, so I have a day job I never talk about. So I'm sitting there in the basement, in my basement office, and I have the TV on in my office, but it sits off to the right, kind of slightly behind my right ear, so I have to turn to watch it. And so I'm sitting there, and my brother Kirby comes down, and he just looks over at the TV and says, Cuomo resigned. Like, what? What? Because I had been expecting him to tough it out like the Klan governor.
Northrum.
Yeah, Ralph Northrum down in Virginia. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, what's going on here.
Actually, Northrum was the guy in blackface. And we managed to demonstrate
that. We don't know, actually.
Yeah, well, actually, we do, because there's a picture of him made the next day wearing the same trousers.
Ah.
And they're odd plaid trousers.
Okay, odd plaid trousers. Well, anyways, Governor Blackface Northrum, and he was able to ride it out. Well, anyways, watching this thing, okay, is that the first thing, you know, that had happened, and what had happened was is that his lawyer comes on. And they're, you know, they cut away live off of Fox News to show it. His lawyer comes on there and gives what seems to be a defense presentation, detailing all the errors and things in the investigation report of Andrew Cuomo's sexual harassment. Well, anyway, she's doing that, and I just turned the sound down, right? And I'm thinking, well, they, you know, this is just defense. And then I glanced over later, and Mario was talking, right? But it sounded, when he started out, it sounded like he was, you know, playing defense, that he was going to tough it out. And when he finally, announced, I think everyone who was watching it live, when he starts to go, I'm resigning, they're like, what? What? He's actually resigning. But, it was all full of self-serving statements, you know, that he said, you know, he had never crossed the line with anyone, according to what's in his own mind, he says. And he said,
well, he's a legend in his own mind. So there you go.
He said, I have slipped and called people honey, sweetheart, and darling. I meant it to be endearing, but women found it dated and offensive. I take full responsibility for my actions. I have been too familiar with people. My sense of humor can be insensitive and off-putting. And he says, there are generational and cultural shifts that I just didn't fully appreciate, and I should have. No excuses. But anyways, I would say that most guys our age can actually sympathize if, and it's a big if, all Cuomo did was make jokes or behave in ways that could be politely deemed flirtatious. But that's not what he was doing.
Well, there's, I guess it has to do with how much older I am than he is. I'm probably closer to his father's age than his age. But there's some things that if I had, that he alleged to have said, that if I had said back in when I was courting young ladies, I would have expected to be slapped at the least. And certainly,
or threatened by the angry brother, the male relative.
Well, no, I mean, this is
the
sort of thing,
woman that you had.
Well,
offended.
That's the sort of thing that you, if you had said that to a young woman, 50 years ago, I really would have expected she would have slapped me. And certainly, he's not known for keeping his hands to himself.
Nope.
So,
but he's not worse than Biden.
So what?
Yeah, right, right. Go, you know. Anyways, but I put up a tweet.
Yes, and my heart attacks were no worse than a stroke. But yeah, I recommend either.
Yeah, I said, let me get out ahead of this rapidly unfolding story to state for the record that Andrew Cuomo did not commit suicide.
Not with that guy's ego.
Anyways, yeah. But yeah, Andrew Cuomo, in other words, if you can think of some scandal-plagued Democrats who have met untimely ends, you know.
Yes. Well, there it is. On the other hand, you brought up the current occupant of the White House. I've got a couple of posts this week that dealt with his performance in office. One of them was called Above Average Performance, and it's basically the Consumer Price Index for July came out this past week. And I went to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they have this nice handy-dandy chart you can get, and it shows over various timescales, and the easiest one to get, kind of the basic one, is over a 20-year span. So for the last 20 years, it's a graph of how the Consumer Price Index has gone. And it's actually, we've had deflation for a while during some of the recovery from the housing bubble back in 2008, 2009. But it's averaged about 2.1% annual inflation rate over the past 20 years. It's held steady at a little bit above 5%, about 5.4% for the last few months. And so that's better than continuing to rock it up. But anyway, that's our above average performance for the administration so far. By the way, did I mention that Carter's second term is still looking like a best case scenario?
Yeah, and speaking of Jimmy Carter and Sherlock Holmes.
Well, yeah, actually, I did have the quote of the day for today was from Sherlock Holmes, and it's his first words to Dr. Watson when they're introduced. You have been in Afghanistan, I perceive.
I presume.
Yes. And apparently we're coming out of Afghanistan with roughly the same performance as the Russians and the British and the Russians the second time.
Well, let me tell you, the Rebecca Downs had a column at townhall.com with the headline, "Last Major City in Northern Afghanistan Falls to Taliban While Joe Biden Vacations at Camp David." Yeah, now, speaking of Camp David, it is about less than 14 miles from the undisclosed location.
I drive past it on the way
on here. Maryland 77 in the Catoctin Mountain Park.
Well, actually, 77 really didn't come close to it, but if you take Park Central Road through the park, you'll find it closed today.
Yes. And so we're like 15 minutes away from where Joe Biden is eating ice cream. What is going on in Afghanistan is absolutely unnecessary. This didn't have to happen the way it happened.
I mean, if we wanted to leave, we could leave, but we could do it in a more orderly fashion. You don't want to get me started about winning and losing wars. We'll have a long, drawn-out conversation about...
But there was no war. There was no war until we announced we were pulling out. That is to say that there were Taliban out there, you know, in the hinterlands, okay? But they weren't capturing major cities, okay? But okay,
look,
I'm not going to look.
Past performance is no proof of
no guarantee of performance.
But for future results. But look, this is we're going down the same road as the Russians, and then the Brits, and then the Russians again. So it's, you know, the Czars couldn't do it, the Brits couldn't do it. The commies couldn't do it. Why, you know, and until somebody is willing to turn massed quantities of the landscape into fused glass, that's going to be a rough neighborhood.
Yep.
Meanwhile, though, we have actually had some science come to light. City Journal has a post up by Jeffrey Anderson that examines the actual published medical literature on the effectiveness of face masks in spreading viral and controlling the spread of viral infections. And it goes for thousands of words, and I'll just give you the TLDR. And it talks about the results of what are called randomized controlled trials, which are the gold standard of how you do this kind of research. In some of the 14 RCTs that have been tested, effectiveness of masks in preventing the transmission of respiratory viruses, three suggest but do not provide any statistically significant evidence in the intention to treat analysis that the masks might be useful. The other 11 suggest that masks are either useless, whether compared to no masks, or because they appear to appear not to add to good hand hygiene, or are actually counterproductive. And from my point of view as an engineer, not a physician, that appears to be consistent with the basic physics of how filters work mechanically. And also, I will point out that the only serious medical problem I have had in the past 2 years was a sinus infection, bacterial sinus infection caused by wearing a mask. So that's kind of where I am. But it could be worse. I could be in Minneapolis.
Yeah, or Chicago. By the way, I just wanted to get back. I just wanted to get back to Afghanistan for a moment.
Go for it.
Okay. Let me give you, beginning in the year 2014, total U.S. fatalities, fatal casualties in Afghanistan, 2014, 54, 2015, 22, 2016, 14, 2017, 17 casualties, fatal, 2018, 15, 2019-22, last year in Afghanistan, we had a total of 9 personnel killed. So far this year, 505 people have been shot to death in Chicago. Okay? So there has been more homicides in Chicago this year than our total fatalities in Afghanistan since 2014. So tell me, why don't we pull out? Why don't we withdraw from Chicago?
I did see a good thing in Babylon Bee about the other 49 states voting to repeal California.
I mean, you know, it's like people say, oh, the carnage in Afghanistan. Look, you know, it's a bad weekend. Well, our total casualties in Afghanistan last year didn't even equal a bad weekend in Chicago.
Well, even Minneapolis has got a pretty good.
Speaking of Minneapolis, that was my next stop. Yes. I'm reading here from the CBS affiliate, ABC affiliate in Minnesota. Minneapolis Police Department to cut back on traffic stops. A memo sent to officers within the Minneapolis Police Department states that the authorities will begin to scale back on specific traffic stops. Chief Madaria Arredondo sent the memo out on Thursday. Arredondo stated that traffic stops relating to expired tags, items dangling from mirrors, and not having a working license plate light would cease. In addition, the police chief said the city's attorney office will also stop prosecuting tickets for driving after license suspension, quote, when the only basis for the suspension was a failure to pay fines or fees and there was no accident or other, quote, egregious driving behavior that would impact public safety, close quote. Quote, traffic enforcement remains a key part in keeping our roadways and streets safe, blah, blah, blah. By prioritizing the most serious traffic violations and no longer conducting routine traffic stops on the lesser violations mentioned above, where it's the only offense, it will have minimal impact on current MPD traffic enforcement and can also help build trust within the communities we serve. Now, that little phrase there, there's also a story at the Washington Post where this is explained that what this was really about was that there were a disproportionate number of persons of color who were being stopped for traffic tickets. And so this is why they're doing this. This is all going back to George Floyd, really.
Well, but here's
back when Prop 87 in California was passed, that's the one that decriminalized theft under like $950 per incident. This was the same argument that was made. Tell me how that's working out.
Right.
Well, it disaster. Depends on where you are, but here's what's going on. This disparate
impact,
is a legal theory that has been used to try to twist the use of civil rights law about being outcome based rather than being driven by what's actually going on is at the input level. And if you have a policy that is facially neutral, okay, like we're going to arrest people who commit murder, okay, and you wind up arresting more green people than blue people, that's not because you're racist against green people if, in fact, the problem is that green people tend to commit murder more often. So that the federal courts are now starting to back away from that. And there have been several of the courts of appeals have been now saying, no, based on some Supreme Court precedents now, we're going to move away from disparate impact. So this is an attempt at the administrative level to do an end run around what the courts are about to enforce. And basically, it's a way of imposing racism in favor of our people in above what's going on. This is even more dangerous than what it appears on the surface.
That's right. Because when you get to okay, quality of life issues. If you know anything about the miracle of New York under Giuliani and Chief Bratton, what they did was they focused on minor issues because they had discovered something. Major criminals could also commit a lot of minor infractions. So when you start enforcing stuff like traffic tickets, one of the reasons that traffic enforcement matters is because, well, drug dealers and sex offenders and other dangerous characters, well, they have to travel around. Okay. Now,
and they tend to be the kind of people who don't obey the rules.
Right. And so if someone is out on probation or parole, okay, they are granted probation or parole or out on bond or whatever with certain terms. Okay. Usually that agreement involves no drug use. Okay, you can be drug tested while you're on parole or probation, and so if you pull somebody over for having a tail light out, let's just say one of their tail lights out, and so you pull them over, you get their driver's license, you run it through, is there a warrant on this person? Are they on probation? Are they on parole? Sir, I smell marijuana in the car. Or is there anything in the car I need to know about? Do you mind if I search the car? Because
by the way, the correct answer to that is never yes.
Yeah. You should never agree. If you want to get a search warrant, you can search the car if you have probable cause. But I'm not going to say yes.
However, most of these people are not
They're not law students. I'll just put it to you that way. Well, meanwhile, back at the ranch, the point being that is that it grants the opportunity to identify perpetrators before they can perpetrate again, to get the convicted robber. If you catch him with a gun, he goes back to prison for felon in possession of a firearm. And if you do not prosecute those cases, if you start letting people go like that, well, you end up with Chicago.
Yes.
You end up what happened this week.
Well, you end up with Oakland. And Oakland is so bad, and its police department is so understaffed now that the Oakland Police Department isn't doing traffic anymore.
Nope.
And to cover the thing, Governor Newsom is actually doing something smart for a change. The California Highway Patrol has taken over traffic enforcement in the city of Oakland.
Right.
To free up the cops to do the rest of their job.
And people talk about, well, these are low-level crimes. Yes, Al Capone went to prison
for tax evasion.
Tax evasion, okay? That whatever it takes to get the criminal off the street, that's what you do.
But
I'm just ranting like a madman, like I'm crazy.
But on the other hand, not everybody who comes up for parole has it granted.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And this week's Crazy People Are Dangerous Syndrome. Where did the phrase crazy people are dangerous come from? Well, it had a lot to do with a certain professor, a former professor named Deborah Frisch.
Mm-hmm.
You can Google Deborah Frisch.
Deborah Ellen Frisch.
Or just search for her name on the other McCain or Hogwash.
Yes. Deb Frisch was teaching at University
Arizona
of Arizona.
State.
Arizona State.
Oregon.
No,
Arizona. She was at Arizona. With yeah.
She was at Arizona as an adjunct using her university computer to harass blogger
Jeff Goldstein.
Jeff Goldstein of Protein Wisdom. He, mm-hmm. he shut his blog down, but he's still around on the tweeters. But Jeff Goldstein, she began making threatening remarks about his children and
only one child at that time.
Yeah, and his family, just saying the most horrible things you can imagine. Well, they identified her university mailing address, and this was in 2010, I believe.
2012.
Was it not? Was
I've
it?
Been involved in this the whole time. Trust me, it was about 2012.
Well, anyways, but the point being
actually, it's been 15 years.
She was exposed. She was exposed and she lost her job at the university. Well, mm-hmm. since then, she has gone on to a career of demented behavior, harassing people. Dr. Deborah Frisch. She's a PhD in psychology and nutty as a squirrel fart.
Yes. Oh, a real psycho. I mean, to the point where she even decided that after you weren't enough fun, she would come after me.
Right.
And it's just amazing.
Last October, for a parole violation, as a matter of fact, she was sent back to prison, and mm-hmm. she came up this past week on Wednesday, she came up for a parole hearing, mm-hmm. and parole was denied.
Well, yes. Sometimes good things happen.
Yeah, and so Deb Frisch is still behind bars where she belongs, and we're still right here, and we will be back next Saturday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, which is our usual time. Now, let this boogie woogie piano continue a little bit more. But remember, folks, that yellow button or the tip jar over at John Hogue's Plus.
Or check out Diana's site if you need some help with your
nonprofit organization.
Or so anything.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it, folks, and we'll talk at you later.
See you, Diana.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Good night. Mr. Breeze.